Once upon a time, a daughter complained to her father that her life was miserable, that she didn't know how she was going to make it. She was tired of fighting and struggling all the time. It just seemed like as one problem was solved, another one soon followed. Her father, a chef, took her to the kitchen. He filled 3 pots with water and placed each on a high fire. Once the 3 pots began to boil, he placed potatoes in 1 pot, eggs in the 2nd pot, and ground coffee beans in the 3rd pot. He then let them sit and boil without saying a word to his daughter. The daughter moaned and impatiently waited, wondering what he was doing. After 20 minutes, he turned off the burners. He took the potatoes out of the pot and placed them in a bowl. He pulled the eggs out and placed them in a bowl too. He then ladled the coffee out and placed it in a cup. Turning to her, he asked, "What do you see?" "Potatoes, eggs, and coffee," she replied hastily. "Look closer," he said, "and touch the potatoes." She did, and noticed that they were soft. He then asked her to take an egg and break it. After pulling off the shell, she observed that the egg was hard-boiled. Finally, he asked her to sip the coffee. Its rich aroma brought a smile to her face. "Father, what does this mean?" she asked. He then explained that the potatoes, the eggs, and the coffee beans had each faced the same adversity, the boiling water. However, each one reacted differently. The potato went in strong, hard, and unrelenting, but in boiling water became soft and weak. The egg was fragile, with a thin outer shell protecting its liquid interior until it was put in boiling water. Then the inside became hard. However, the ground coffee beans were unique. After they were exposed to the boiling water, they changed the water and created something new. "Which are you?" he asked his daughter. "When adversity knocks on your door, how do you respond?" Hello and welcome to the Big Happy Life podcast. I'm Natalie Britt, and I'm a coach, trainer, and hypnotherapist. And as an overthinker, it is my job to help fellow overthinkers to free themselves from the traps created by their minds so they can live in full color. That's what I'm attempting to do with my life, and that's what I hope to share with you in this podcast too. Ways that we can free ourselves from the way our thoughts can keep us trapped so that we can live our lives the way we intend, enjoy them to their fullest, and really live in full color. We already know that our thinking changes our actions, but as that story shows us, our thinking changes more than that too. It changes what happens to us. It shapes our identities and our relationships and our environment. So it's wise for us to learn how to think more deliberately. This week, we're talking about optimistic thinking. When and how to do it. Last week, we talked about the benefits of pessimistic thinking, and we know that it would be unwise to think optimistically all the time. But pessimism has a way of keeping us trapped. Pessimistic thinking, when overused, tends to make us feel helpless, tends to keep us stuck in patterns that we can't see a way out of because it feels like the problems we face are more permanent than they really are. It feels to us like we have less agency and less possibility to make changes because of who we are and what skills we possess when we think pessimistically. Optimists do things differently. Optimists can find resourcefulness in the face of adversity. And so that becomes a really, really useful skill to develop. And that's what we're going to explore in this episode. How do we do that? What are the specific hallmarks of optimistic thinking? And when are they best to use? So if you are somebody who has goals you'd like to achieve, but you've been stuck in patterns, maybe repeating the same mistakes or what you perceive to be failures over and over again, then this episode is for you because it may give some really practical, useful tools for you to change your thinking in specific ways that may allow you to open some doors, to free your thinking and add more flexibility to the options that feel like they're available to you. If that sounds like something useful to you, let's dive in. It's funny, I'm not sure I know many optimists. Yet when I ran a poll a few weeks ago back on social media, I asked three questions. I asked, are you an overthinker? Yes or no. Are you a pessimist? Yes or no. And what does pessimistic mean to you? 15 people answered those three questions. And when it came to the question about, are you a pessimist? 13 of the 15 people said no. One said sometimes, and one said yes. The person who said yes was my husband. Gosh, I love him. I love him for so many reasons, not the least of which is his ability to see and be willing to look at things within himself that other people are not always willing to see or look at. And I think he is right. I think he does tend towards pessimistic thinking in just the same way that I do, though I'm not sure if it was true when we first met. But he certainly does think more pessimistically now. But we have two children, and he has two more children from his previous marriage. Now, both of our children and both of his children have been through things that have left their mark. And he takes it upon himself to look out for all of us and to do what he can to keep all of us safe. It's a hard job, and it's one that, as all parents know, puts you in direct touch with your own powerlessness a lot of the time. Things go wrong, people get hurt, there's often nothing you can do about it. And I think he's become more pessimistic in his thinking as the reality of life as a father has loomed ever larger. I was reflecting on that as I prepared for this episode, and I wondered, why am I gradually becoming less pessimistic, despite facing the same perpetual challenges? And especially considering the fact that when we met, I'm pretty sure I was the more pessimistic of the two of us. And then I realized that there's another piece of the puzzle that I had almost missed before. In all this talk about optimism and pessimism, I realized there's another way. A way that's super important and actually has a huge part to play in what I teach my clients to do when they're wanting to bring more peace and calm to their minds and their lives. It's acceptance. One of my favorite quotes is from Jiddu Krishnamurti, who said, "Here is my secret. I don't mind what happens." Imagine you're completely okay with whatever happens in your life. Whether or not you get the job, whether or not your child aces the maths test, your business makes millions or goes bust, your book gets picked up or doesn't. Either way, you're okay. Imagine what kind of peace you would be able to carry through your life if you didn't need things to be a particular way. I can't imagine saying, I don't mind if someone I love gets sick, or I don't mind if we lose our house. Yet that's essentially the point this quote suggests we get to if we want true inner peace. And when I think about the parts of my life where I'm gradually beginning to be able to lessen the amount of pessimistic thinking I use and move with greater ease towards peace and being okay and content with whatever happens, it is the difference between when I can accept things the way they are and accept that I can't control an outcome versus the times when I absolutely feel that the outcome has to go one way or the other. Then I do struggle and I do have to kind of actively switch on optimistic thinking. So all that to say, all of this talk about optimism and pessimism is great, but it still carries with it a sense of needing things to go a particular way in order for us to be okay. The level of acceptance required for that kind of guru-style living exists beyond optimism, and perhaps is for another time. I still have a lot to learn on that journey towards acceptance, but the small amount of acceptance that I have been able to cultivate already has released me from much of the pessimism and freed me to take action even when the odds potentially are stacked against me, particularly when it comes to doing something that is actually enjoyable for me, like writing my book. I have no idea whether it's going to be published, And I can be optimistic about it and I can keep going. But ultimately, if I can let go of whether or not it has to be published in order for me to enjoy writing it, then the probability of me writing it goes up. And the probability of me having a good time and that being worth doing regardless goes up too. So as we go into this episode and explore optimistic thinking, that's just a small caveat to say there's more to the story. But while we're all kind of on our way towards becoming gurus, we could still use some optimistic thinking along the way when we actually do want things to work out a particular way and it matters to us to get them there. So to work out when the right time is to be optimistic, it's useful to think about the risks and the consequences of the choices that you are currently looking at. So I say that because, as we found last week, we tend to make more realistic predictions when we think more pessimistically. We tend to be more cautious and we tend to be able to make best use of our resources over a longer period of time when the thing that we're working on is going to take a long time to unfold and we might have to conserve our resources to get us through. Like, you know, how long is it going to take me to find a job? How long is it going to take me to get this business off the ground? Et cetera, et cetera. When we think more pessimistically, we can prepare for those potentially with greater reality and we can get through it maybe more easily. But as we saw with the Scottish Parliament building example, the possibility of that kind of realistic thinking can be so negative and so overwhelming that it could actually keep us stuck and we don't take the step forward. So to figure out whether or not optimistic thinking is the right type of thinking to employ, we have to ask ourselves, are we willing to take the risk? Now, we have to decide that at the outset, knowing that the risks are going to begin to weigh more heavily. And as we move forward with a long-term project, let's say like starting a business, it can take anything from 6 months to 5 to 10 years to get the thing off the ground. So if that's what you're going to be up against, what will be the consequences of moving forward? Can you tolerate those consequences? And if so, then optimistic thinking is exactly what you're going to need, because pessimistic thinking is going to have you running in circles, getting stuck, procrastinating, feeling powerless, possibly even leading to depression. And that's not what we want on our way to our big goals. So if you've decided, okay, now's the time, this is something that requires me to really channel the optimist within me, how do you do that? Over the next 10 minutes or so, I'm going to share with you 8 different ways that you can be more optimistic in your thinking. These are really specific so that you can consciously choose and shape your thinking. You might even want to write some of these things down so that you can kind of follow the blueprint. And for those of you who subscribe to my Substack page, which is nataliebritt.substack.com, you will have access to a downloadable PDF which has these 8 things in it. So you can access them at any time and follow the very practical steps for how to think this way if you would like to. So step 1, make your wins personal. Every positive step, every completed action, every learning point achieved is somehow down to you. Find it and recognize it. If you're new to thinking this way, something that can help is having an evening practice of writing in a journal. Just a minute or two is all that's needed. Think of something that happened in the day that you're pleased with and write how that outcome is personal to you. It's because of who you are, something you did. It is possible to do this even on bad days. For example, the whole day might have gone down the pan, but there was a moment in the afternoon where you put the kettle on, you made a cup of tea, and you took 2 deep breaths. So then you might write, I'm proud of myself for taking a few moments to breathe mindfully while everything was falling apart around me. I'm someone who can maintain a calm mind when I choose to. Done daily, this practice reliably and predictably changes how you see yourself. And so what it does over time is it changes how you see yourself in the difficult moments. So the chance of a whole day feeling like it's gone down the pan really significantly reduces because your choices in every moment begin to become more powerful because you start to see yourself as more powerful within the situations. Number two is watch for the difference between I am and I do. This was one of the things I had to do with pessimistic thinking because saying I am a pessimist versus I think like a pessimist or I have pessimistic thinking or even I do pessimism, it's a thing that is outside of me and therefore there becomes a choice. It's an action or a way of doing something and those things can be changed. It's not pessimistic to recognize that you've made a bad choice or you've made a choice that didn't work for you, as long as you recognize that you have the option to make a different choice next time. So if you listen to the difference between these two statements, I chose to spend 2 hours playing video games, so I didn't have enough time to go to the gym, versus I am lazy because I spent 2 hours playing video games and didn't go to the gym. One is an I am statement. And our brains are always listening, and our brains like consistency. As Jim Quick says, if we argue for our limitations, we get to keep them. Training your brain to believe you are lazy sets you up for very long and hard battles because the brain would much rather go for consistency than have it feel like your entire identity is unstable and could change at any moment. So if you're lazy, then you need to make lazy choices because that's who you are. But if you simply made a choice about how to spend your time and that led to a consequence and you aren't anything, you just made a choice, then the options become far easier to select and far more varied for the next time you have to make a choice. And ultimately, for most of the things that really matter to us in life, they are choice after choice after choice after choice. They're not one-offs. So we need to think in ways that allow us to make this choice and the next one and the next one and the next one in the direction of our goals. And that's why this particular one is so important. Number three is don't take responsibility for things that are outside your control and make them personal. For example, I started a business during a global pandemic. Now, if that becomes personal, I'm so unlucky, I have bad timing, I was so stupid, I shouldn't have done that. Now, how do I do it next time when I have another business idea? Whereas when we can recognize that things outside of our control have an impact on our choices, and that those impacts don't say anything about us personally, then we can move through the difficulty, not necessarily easily, because starting a business in a pandemic and having that not work out can be catastrophic and was for thousands of people. But whether and how we get up after something like that, I think, is determined a lot by whether or not we feel like somehow we were to blame for that happening. Whereas when we can recognize that the negative outcome we experienced as a result of this thing was down to nothing that we did and nothing that we had control over. And that is one of the key differences between optimistic thinking and pessimistic thinking. An optimist lets go of the things that are outside of their control and recognizes there was nothing that could have been done, whereas a pessimist finds fault in what they did, what they thought, and what they should have done and what they should have thought. And that can keep us stuck far more easily. So really important that we learn how to let go of the things that we couldn't control and move forward focusing on the things that we have an impact on. Following on from that, number four is to explain failures and setbacks as temporary. This is one of the key hallmarks of optimistic thinking, according to Martin Seligman as well. As we saw in episode 95 and episode 96, pessimistic thinkers tend to think of failures and setbacks as happening due to something that's permanent or fixed. They use what we call global language. Everyone, always, everywhere, all the time, never, and so on. Look at the situation, listen to what you're saying to yourself, and look out for these globalizations. Nobody ever responds to my social media adverts. Builds permanence into the setback. If nobody ever responds, what's the point in running another ad? And if you don't run another ad, what happens to your business? So instead, the thinking becomes much more specific and much more accurate. 6 people responded to this advert. I was expecting at least 50 responses. Now you have a concrete problem to work with, and you can start figuring out what you need to change so that you get more responses next time. So with a temporary setback comes a path forward and a learning to be taken, a change to be made. And that's quite empowering and allows us to really bring creativity and problem solving to the situation rather than going, oh God, it's hopeless, and then doing nothing. Number 5 follows on from that and is to explain failures and setbacks as localized rather than pervasive or spreading into other areas. So I shouted at my child when he threw bathwater in my face because I missed the playfulness of what he was doing. Now is a single situation. It's not, my son is so inconsiderate, he never thinks about the effort it takes me to clean the house. Or I'm a bad parent because I was grumpy and angry during bath time. Both of those extend the problem beyond the situation, beyond the thing that actually happened, and can bleed then into other areas of your relationship and can also make you so self-critical that it's actually hard to feel playful. Those pervasive thoughts kind of sit waiting for us for the next time something minor happens, and then we blow up again. So to help with that, use your antenna, A-N-T-E-N-A, which stands for A, adversity, what actually happened. Write it down. Take all the emotion out of it. What was the adversity? What was the thing that happened? My son splashed water out of the bath, wetting the floor, the sink, and the toilet. So now we have the A, adversity. N-T, so we've got ant. N-T, negative thought. My negative thought might have been, he's so inconsiderate. Now I have to clean the bathroom, and if I don't make a big thing of it, he'll do it again and again. He's going to be one of those teenagers who always leaves his wet towels lying everywhere. Oh God, he's going to be such a useless adult who can't do anything for himself. So that's the negative thought. What is the effect? That's the E of antenna. What is the effect? Notice the effect those thoughts have on you and the choice that you make about what happens next. In the early days, you won't necessarily be able to catch yourself in these moments, and you might need to do this after the fact. But the more you do it, the better you get at catching the negative thoughts when they come. So when you can notice that it's having an effect on you that's actually making you do more of the thing you don't want to do, as soon as you begin to notice that, an alternative path opens up. And that's what the NA of antenna is. Notice alternative. On the alternative path, you have the opportunity for a new thought, new feeling, and new action. So in the sort of stuck situation where you get trapped in the negative thought loop and it just gets bigger and bigger, the minute you notice the effect it's having on you, you have the opportunity to notice that an alternative exists if you are in a place where you can take the alternative. And what that requires is a new thought. So you might use some of the things from earlier in this list. You might recognize that this is a single situation. It is not bleeding out into everything. It's not permanent. It's not fixed. The kid's 6 years old. He was playing in the bath and he's created a massive tidal wave and there's a lot to clean up. But yeah, it is kind of funny. And it's the kind of thing that over a dinner table when he's 40 years old and he's telling his friends about how his mother flipped out and then they laughed as they used all the towels in the house to clean up all the mess, that there's an option for another story here and that actually it's not a catastrophe. The minute a new alternative becomes available, you have the option to take it. And that is one of the ways that we disrupt our patterns, that we break our patterns, and that we create new ones. And yes, of course, he's only 6, he's going to do it again. But if each time he does it, there's a 50-50 shot of it being a big laugh and a moment for you both to bond versus 100% chance of it feeling catastrophic and ending in a massive fight, then half the time something really good comes out of it. And that's all we can really ask of ourselves, is more of the time we move in the direction we want to go than moving in the direction we don't want to go. And that's really what antenna is about. So just to recap then, the A stands for adversity, what happened. NT is the negative thought we had. E is effect, what effect did it have on me? And NA is notice alternative. What is the other option available to you if you wish to take it? Number 7 on the list is visualize successful outcomes in detail. Visualize yourself taking action towards those successful outcomes. Now, this one is for you if you have specific goals that you need to stay on track for, like some of the goals I've mentioned already, starting a business, getting a particular health goal achieved, maybe running a marathon or losing a particular amount of weight or whatever it is that you have your heart set on that requires you to stay the path for a long time. One of the things that we know and that has been proven neurologically is that when we take time to visualize and the mind begins to internalize a belief that a path exists towards this particular outcome, and we can see ourselves taking the steps on that path, then when the time comes that we need to start making the choices that will lead us in that direction, we already have a level of consistency built up in our thoughts because we've been visualizing it. The brain isn't good at telling the difference between memory, imagination, and reality. Of course, we know when we're in a moment and something is real, but in terms of, like, if I give you an example that you've probably experienced, if you've lay in your bed at night worrying about something that's coming up or reliving something that was just awful from the past, you'll know that your body temperature probably changed, your heart rate might have changed, your stress levels went up, and the whole time, in reality, you were lying very comfortably and very safely in your bed. That's what I mean about the brain not being able to tell the difference. So of course, you can see where you are, but in terms of what happens to your body and how you react chemically, there's not a lot of difference between being in the situation and just thinking about it. So there's massive benefit to be had when you begin to teach your system what it feels like to be successful. Then all of the techniques that I've talked about earlier in this list become easier to do because they become things that you can visualize yourself actually doing in the moment. And then the final one is take small steps to prove to yourself that you can do this. As we know from so many episodes on this podcast, habits form one tiny decision at a time. And so we don't need to come out all guns blazing and be little miss happy all the time. We can take tiny steps each day to put these things into practice. We don't have to get it right all the time. I don't believe many people do. I certainly don't. And that's okay, because every single day, the more steps we accrue and the more momentum we gather, the more likely we are to begin to change how we see ourselves. And even now, when I think back, I mentioned to you back in episode 95 about having done the pessimistic thinking survey when I first got Martin Seligman's book in 2016, and then doing it again this year, 2024. And my results are different. I am less pessimistic on that scale. And that has happened one tiny little step at a time. It's true, my score still shows a leaning towards pessimistic thinking, but the way I've noticed a change in the last several months, since really investing in thinking about this and understanding it about myself, is it's helping to let me notice the negative thoughts that keep me stuck and make me feel powerless when actually an alternative thought and action exists. It's been particularly powerful in my relationship my relationships with my children, and particularly powerful in my business, because those are two areas where sometimes I do feel overwhelmed and I do feel helpless. And I feel like no matter what I do, it's not good enough. I'm not good enough and it's not going to work. And those have been thoughts that in the past have been able to stop me in my tracks, where I just go, do you know what? I throw all the cards in the air. I can't do this. There's no point, because nothing I do is going to make any difference. And since learning this about myself and being able to see the nuts and the bolts of that type of thinking, I am much more able now to spot the alternative option, to spot the alternative thought, feeling, and action that is there for the taking if I choose to. Now, sometimes I'm too emotional and I can't, but the more I take advantage of these alternative options, the less often I feel overwhelmed, and the more often I'm able to let things go or see what exists for me to take action upon. And that's making me more consistent, less grumpy, less moody, and far more optimistic, which is, of course, the whole point of everything we've been talking about over the last half hour. So I hope that has given you some practical ideas. I hope it's given you some food for thought. If you would like that downloadable PDF, you can get that at bighappylife.co.uk, and you can also get it on my Substack page, which is nataliebritt.substack.com. Both of those places will give you the opportunity to subscribe to the podcast and receive all the latest episodes with any downloads directly to your inbox. And if you have found this episode useful, I would be so grateful if you would leave a review. It really pleases the podcast gods and helps get the podcast to more listeners. Other than that, all that remains for me to say is I hope you'll join me again next week, and thanks for listening.